Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center Podcast Feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center Podcast Feed is the Bad Batch Report. I fully think that you are on top of the electronic dance music scene. I think Wrecker groans and grunts are going to be mixed into every popular song on the dance floor very soon.
Thank you for seeing me, sir. Thank you for recognizing my inner Wrecker.
Yeah, people have made the joke sometimes of dance music being utsa, utsa, utsa. And now I think It's just going to be, ah, ah, ah.
Hey, great.
Oh, he's great. I they used to have a lot of the vocal driving instructions on your car in different fun voices. I think Wrecker saying, you should have turned 5 minutes ago would be great.
It's been rewarding. Wrecker and Tech are now my favorite comedy duo. We'll dive in a little bit later here.
Absolutely. But when there's another spinoff, please, I hope that it is just them in some weird dive doing a comedy act. Be great. But we're going to get into this episode that's got some great comedy in it and some things that are not comedy at all. called Death. Anyway, let's get into episode 4 of Bad Batch Cornered. It is written by Christian Taylor, directed by Saul Ruiz. It is about a 25-ish minute episode. It just flies, I think. Ken, what was your overall reaction to this episode? You love it, like it, struggle with it? Did you groan like Wrecker? What happened to you?
No, I really love this. In terms of music, I'm calling this a little rock radio single. Short to the point. A lot of passion, a lot of guitars wailing, and a great middle eight, which is echoing the droids to me. I love this little song.
This is a very musical episode of the Bad Batch Report. Yeah, I really like this episode. I think it was great to see an episode that definitely had ideas, definitely had heart, definitely advanced the story, but also really kind of focused on action in a specific way. We talked last week about how, yeah, there definitely was action, but it was pretty much only the horrific action of the violence from the proto stormtroopers and Crosshair. But with this, it felt like everything about the episode, and in particular the action, really, instead of just telling, also really did a great job showing the desperation of Bad Batch situation and the sort of the danger of the galaxy by kind of heightening the violence and the action, you know, and like we've been saying every episode, it's not just like, okay, now it's gritty Star Wars. All of that is contrasted against the humor of the team and the hope of the team and the proactive energy and particularly Omega's desire to have family and to see the galaxy. And there's all these great moments of hope. But the overall episode really, really leans into the danger and the death.
Hope clashing against reality sometimes, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that was Omega's journey for sure of hope. Hope meets reality, and hope survived, it seems like.
No, that's key. I don't want to sound like get ready, kid. The world's going to break you. No, I mean, you know, that's part of perseverance and overcoming that stuff is valuable. Omega's representing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Big, big Star Wars ideas, I think, were really boiled down in Omega's journey in this rock tune of an episode, as you described it. I also just felt like we'll talk about Fennec Shand in detail, of course, but just for a big picture reaction, I think Fennec Shand being good and brutal, being able to really take it to the Bad Batch, kind of made not just her, but the concept of bounty hunters legitimately terrifying again. Like, we as fans, I think, are kind of so used to them, and we're used to seeing them fight bounty hunters fight each other or go up against Jedi or whatever. And to kind of see them through the eyes of Omega and see her take it to these absolute, you know, pro bruisers of the Bad Batch just made bounty hunters as a concept scary again.
Yeah, I put the note of just simply great use of Fennec Shand. What you're saying really works for me. This is, and I think they stand individually, and I'm not, this isn't a rank, this isn't a battle. I think Cad Bane's actual debut on broadcast television, which is the hostage crisis situation where he and his team are real deadly and real intense. And this one for Fennec Shand. Yes, we know Fennec Shand. We're probably all excited for this moment, Ming-Na Wen getting to voice his character. But just in terms of just the story, yeah, you're exactly right. There's down and dirty death. And not only is she dangerous, but the ability to go soft and the ability to manipulate Omega it makes her equally as powerful. This is a full 360 degree threat.
Right. Yeah. You get the sense that she is deadly in a fight or just a discussion. She'll get you either way. And that makes her just truly deadly. And that conversation at the end really drove it home. Like, because while I was watching the episode, like, oh, wow, Fennec Shand really is a cool, great, badass, great manipulator and ass kicker. But then having the clones, the Bad Batch, explain to Omega of what a bounty hunter is, you know, it really drove it home. I think another thing for me is it was great to see a really urban environment since we have been mostly in remote areas or Kamino. So it was fun to see an urban environment realized, a city environment realized in the Bad Batch. And then the other big picture thing for me is I was really struck by this episode. We'll see if the show changes up at all. But right now, it's very serialized, you know, much closer to kind of the shape and flow of The Mandalorian than any of the animated shows have been. There's certainly been, you know, cliffhangers or arcs or continuing stories. But this is feels very, very serialized in a way like, yeah, like they haven't been yet. So I'm curious to see if that continues, if they're just kind of rolling from one desperate need to the next, or if the Bad Batch kind of settles into a home base or a specific mission, or if they're going to be continue to be very reactive.
Yeah, and we've discussed kind of maybe wanting that in a way, but I love what's going on. I put the note of this series is really taking its time, the serialized nature of it, like we've been discussing. But like this episode specifically was just like, no, we're going to get there. We're going to get there with what we need you to know. And we're going to this is part of a bigger picture. And you can really feel it. We would discuss it week to week. But this is one real I described as a rock radio single. This just might be the first chorus of a bigger song.
Yeah, I know. And I feel like maybe the song is titled, What Fire Do We Have to Put Out Now? Because that's really that vibe, you know. And there's a line at the end about what their intentions were from Hunter about finding out who Fennec Shand is and who hired her. And we'll be really curious to see how directly that's followed up, if that's the next episode or six episodes from now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's dive in then to the big themes and what ideas are at stake in the episode. What were you affected by? What did you feel like were the big ideas?
Yeah, this is the big one. Well, there's a lot of big ones. In fact, one of the ones I just not jotted down at the end, you and I have already touched upon, which is Omega and this search for discovery and also learning the truth and how much do you want to protect Omega? And how much should she know what the world is and to avoid some of these stuff down the line? And it is a bigger question of parenting, which is part of what's going on in this episode. So we can come to that in a second there. I put down how will you survive on your own? This cornered idea. They're on the run. They're just kind of emotionally cornered by what's going on in the galaxy. Hunter saying things are changing quicker than I thought. So they're cornered in a changing galaxy, which connects to this kind of theme of friendship. Connections. Who do you trust? Tech at one point says, hey, we're on our own with supplies, which is true. So that means they have each other and a great exchange with Omega and Fennec. I got separated from my friends. Well, the galaxy is a dangerous place to be on your own. I'm not alone. I have my friends. Aren't you lucky? Love that exchange. That was the big theme for me. Some sub themes down the line to discuss too. But
yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you're pulling out the key idea that is in that cornered title, right? That they are cornered in terms of their actual practical needs, but also feeling cornered kind of emotionally. And I love that line from, I believe it was Tech, who was like, yeah, without the Republic, we were going to have to get all those things that we would just get a resupply for. And this is a very weird pull, a very weird connection in my mind, but very young in my life, I read Sammy Davis Jr.'s second autobiography, Why Me? And there's this great passage in it where Sammy Davis Jr. is talking about how he is this utter consummate entertainment professional. He can sing, he can dance, he can do impressions, he can do pistol tricks from Westerns. Like he's a drummer. He can do it all. But if you take him out of that environment, he doesn't know how to make toast.
Right.
And he talks about discovering that as a parent and his child coming to him for advice about, like, you know, buying a car and just kind of and having a birthday party. And he was like, would you like to know how to do a show stopping version of Birth of the Blues? Because that's what I know. And right. That just popped into my mind of like, what a cool picture of the Bad Batch, you know, so great, so competent at missions. Because everything else has been taken care of for them.
Yeah, that's when I was about 12 or 13, we had some friends of the family over, and the dad was like literally like a rocket scientist type, including the crazy hair that just does. and they were making lunch, and he turned to his wife, and my mom said something about, what do you want in your sandwich? And he turned to his wife and goes, what do I want in my sandwich? I don't know. And that's also reminds me of Tech now a little bit, though. Tech would be, a sandwich is best made with meat, lettuce, and yeah.
He'd look it up on his little wrist device, on his Wikipedia on his wrist.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, great stuff.
Yeah. So I think that really framed the characters and gave them this kind of humanity, and really framed, like, not only like, it's not just, oh, we're figuring out how to be parents or how to be this new kind of unit, but just like, yeah, we'd never had to do these things for ourselves, and we can, and we will, and we'll figure it out. But this is new to us. It was really cool.
Yeah.
One of the big ideas for me is just kind of what has value. Obviously, as you're saying, they're adjusting to this new world, new rules, but also that means kind of everything has a different price tag to it, literally and just sort of culturally in every sense, right? Like you said, that great underline, things are changing quicker than I thought. But there's so much in this episode that is about bartering and negotiating and people being in disagreement of what has value now. We get Vice Admiral Rampart again droning on about Imperial credits, reminding you that like the basic money of this galaxy, the basic currency has changed. But then we get them paying off the docking bay Solistin, Raspar 6. We get them literally selling Echo, Fennec Shan stealing fruit for Omega and being like, that's how you go. That focus where I think this theme really came into view is, you know, that Pyro Denton mine being super valuable to them because they are missions. They are combat, and Wrecker even highlighting that's our last explosive, and explosive to them is worth everything. Right. But then the Grand going, no, not really. It doesn't have value right now in this economy. And then that kind of being the key thing that Hunter has up his sleeve to rescue Omega, to me really created this connection between all of the financial bartering that's going on and then what's actually at stake. What actually has value is Omega, right? As a bounty and to the clones, to the Bad Batch, as a person. To me, that connection between the Pyro Denton mine's financial value and using it to rescue Omega made this whole question of what has value really focus on that's the decision that the Bad Batch is going to be making of like just staying alive and taking care of one another. That's the mission. That's what has value because there's death and violence and terror everywhere.
Man, well done on this one, my friend. Yeah, I was drawn to this one in this real hyper-focused way of listening to Rampart's speech up top, which we've heard before, right? But something jumps out to me in this one of just it literally says your credits have no value now, which is their way of saying you have no value, but with us, you've got value. We're the Empire. Come on, exchange yourself for what we got going over here. And that jumped out to me. And then you're so right. Literally, there's a great sequence with the bribe. Now we got Bobby Moynihan shows up a little bit later, and then Taron Killam. We got the SNL Star Wars nerds from about 5 years ago all over this episode, waiting for Mikey Day to show up too. But I love the idea of knowing your own value too. Of Echo, I am worth more than 2,000 credits. It's a joke. It's a great bit. But to me, we both know and others have discussed too, of just like, hey, we're waiting for a big Echo episode or there's more with Echo coming. We know, but I love in this one, he knows his value. He goes forth with this little mission and then ends up leading the droids in a mission that's more about their true worth and purpose than just sitting in the storage shed or the supply closet of this trader. So that all the value is all the way through it. You're absolutely right. Including the value of fruit or toys for, Vorpax to play.
Yeah, no, you're saying a lot of great stuff. I really like that Echo gave some value to the droids. And I love what you're saying about Vice Admiral Rampart's droning about the Imperial credits in the background of it was great to be like, oh, this isn't just Seleucami. This is happening everywhere. That was just like a great practical revelation. But yeah, connecting it to the change in currency is about the individuals, right? We know that it's partially just like, yeah, in order to use the Imperial credits, you need the chain code. And that's, a measure of control and all that. But that idea at the end of his speech where he always says, out of the generosity of the Empire, without acknowledging, like, we're saying it's generous to give you your value, which we just took from you.
Yeah.
Is such a great knife twist.
Yeah. tragic. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not laughing at the plight of the new citizens of the Republic.
I have one other kind of big idea from this episode that we were kind of touching on, but I'm curious what else you might have up your sleeve.
up my sleeve. Not much. Well, all big. For a little tiny episode, a lot in there, and a lot to pull in. Going to the what I talked about, the discovery and the truth, and just there's on a practical level, it's like, you know, I love some of the moments with Omega in this episode are some of my favorite because they're so just tiny, quiet, and sweet, and just full of whimsy and wonder, and then she just, you know, charges out in the world, not even her fault. One of the, Ken goes to Game of Thrones themes here. Late in the show's run, there were several times where the great Ned Stark, who was great, his own children, looking back, questioned how much he protected them from what reality was. All intentions were good, and how much that cost them and how much that hurt them. And I see the end of this episode. We've already seen Omega, you're part of the team. Omega, you got a little cubby to sleep in, your own little room. At the end of this one, it's just kind of like, hey, there's some stuff out here. We can't just let you float around. Look, I'm not a parent. I know you're not either, Joseph. We missed having Jennifer around about this, but it's like, what point do you kind of say, don't go down that corridor? At what point do you try to protect? At what point do you try to prepare? And that jumped out at me a lot through this episode, because poor Omega, she just wants to sightsee.
Yeah, no, and it feels a little bit more like the parenting on this one is probably going to be, before you go down that corridor, because we know we can't stop you, you should know there are monsters there.
Going back to the Sue stuff, right, from Saluka.
Absolutely. Yeah, that you can't stop them from finding trouble, but you just have to help them through it. Yeah, that felt like the Sue lessons were actively being used by Hunter.
Yeah.
I think for me, the other big idea that you were kind of touching on is, I guess it is another way to talk about personal value, but I thought that there was just a lot in this idea about identity, about exactly who are people. There was a lot of discussion about changing or obscuring or faking identities, which I think is really valuable because it ties into this era of the Empire and the need to kind of be on the run, where everyone has just kind of a little bit of a feeling of doubt and paranoia. You know, the reason that they're setting down on Pandora is because they need to change the ship's code, right? So there's already even just, that's what's making the plot move of, is kind of hiding the identity of their ship, of the Havoc Marauder. And then there's this idea that the Bad Batch have to try to be civilians. Like they actually use that term of like, we have to try to be civilians. Then you got Echo pretending to be a droid. You have Omega trying to be a regular kid, you know, playing with toys, seeing the sights, but then she's right back to being a clone, you know, and a part of this unit that is going to attract danger. You got Fennec Shand pretending to be a friend. Then you have the question of, well, who is Fennec Shand really, and who is she working with? All of this brings up who exactly is Omega? Why is she so valuable? And how many different people know about her and all those kind of things. You got CG-67, the astromech droid that you were talking about, really needing to be defined by her leadership role. So there's another idea of identity. And then the other big one for me, which I really liked, which was really affecting, is the scene where the Pantorans were cheering for that march of very stormtrooper-like clone troopers. So we got to see these Pantorans cheering for their future oppressors.
Yes.
And that great line exchange of Omega saying, but the war's over, isn't that good? And Echo saying, depends which side you're on. Which got all of these individual ideas of identity that all of our characters were kind of cycling through and tying it to this era where the Empire is telling you it's one thing, but its actions are showing you that it is another.
Yeah. Down to the dock worker, bribing, but still taking bigger. It's all the way through. I love that you pointed out it starts with the ship.
Yeah. Everything is either trying to discover or obscure what they are in order to get by.
Yeah. Yeah.
And make ends meet. Yeah. Any other specific themes, or do you want to go on to how this episode reflects a larger storytelling and perspective of Star Wars?
Let's go there. Curious to hear what you got, how you're connecting bribes to Star Wars.
I think for me, I was really affected. We've talked a little bit about Omega's journey, but I felt like in this episode, it was almost like this episode felt like an adaptation of some of Lucas talking about Star Wars.
Talking
about how it is about coming of age. You know, it's about people taking their first steps. And I like that it was such a mix of joy and horror that Omega wanted to explore, right? And then we get to see some of the fun, bright versions of that. She sees toys. She sees cute animals. And then very quickly, she is walking into literal darkness with a stranger. And then the horror comes, you know? And then we see her be able to handle that. She's observant and resourceful. She definitely needs the clones' help, the Bad Batch's help, but she is, you know, seeing the blaster, seeing the lever on the truck, pulling it. So she goes through this whole arc that is about sort of, let's explore the world. Oh, wow. The world can be frightening and dangerous. I am gathering the skills I need to cope with the reality of the world, just like you were talking about with the Starks. She went on a whole Stark children, multiple season journey in this one episode. And I think for me, it was just that larger idea of, you know, classic Star Wars, when Luke is staring at the twin sunsets, when Anakin is staring up at all of the stars and wants to visit them all, that they're both starting from that place of adventure. What fun and excitement is out there? And like, a ton of fun and excitement is out there, and also some horror. And you need to be growing up means figuring out how to enjoy the joy, but also cope with the horror. And I felt like that was just absolutely compressed into Omega's journey in this one episode.
Yeah. Light and dark, right? Life and death, darkness, light, all of it. Not in terms of just spiritual balance, but just everything that's out there, and how some of the things we've already talked about, including knowing your value or knowing the value of things and discovering your identity, the identity of those around you, all kind of flows really nicely. What you're saying here, truly a lesson for stepping out into the bigger world.
Yeah, exactly. And finding out who you are, and maybe be careful about strangers. I guess with all of her training on Kamino, Omega did not get like this absolute basic from a human earth lessons of don't trust strangers, don't take food from strangers. I'm like, this is almost an 80s after school special about what not to do.
A Lifetime original movie, The Bad Batch.
Food from a bounty hunter. Very special show. So that was one of the big ones for me that really felt connected to the larger Star Wars perspective, that adventure is great, but it can also be scary.
Yeah, that's great. And I always, for me, I'm focusing on sometimes like that bigger picture and that larger story. And we're in this beginning of the reign of the Empire, and we know where that goes and we know where that ends. And we talked a lot about even connecting to some of the Rise of Skywalker stuff if we're not alone, and just that moment for me when Omega's just like, no, I've got friends. There's a friend. And how you need to have those connections. You need to have those friendships. And faith in them is what's going to get you through. And them having faith in you. There's a lot of Omega handling stuff herself here, or being told, go up there and run. And she joins the fight as soon as she kind of learns a little bit more about Fennec Shand on the fly. And how that kind of flows nicely to me into what we're going to be building towards 19 years or so from the story in Star Wars.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great. I think the only other thing for me is just driving home even more of what they've been building about the horror of the Imperial reign. And I think this one, the cut and run episode is very much about limiting movement. And this one was really about like that greed and that difficulty just getting your basic needs met. It was really the focus of this episode, painting the picture of the terror of the Imperial reign. And this episode felt a lot like it was building towards, this is the world that, you know, Han and Kira grow up in, and everybody in Solo. And this is felt very Solo-like of, it's really hard to get anything done with the way the Empire is clamping down on anything that will give you mobility or freedom.
Yeah, the Empire's giving you value, man.
Exactly like this. Yeah. And this it was, you know, an urban environment, and a lot of people just really concerned about making ends meet financially.
Yeah.
And that big Star Wars theme of greed maybe sneaking in a little bit around the edges.
Oh, very much.
Anything else for you in terms of how it reflected the larger story of Star Wars?
Well, one thing it reflected in the larger story of Star Wars, Joseph, is one of our favorite things. There's a lot of crusty, grizzled weirdos just running ports, trading goods all through the galaxy.
There really, really were. There is a very trusting human who left his speeder running.
Yeah, which is, you know, the beauty of the show. Everyone talks about how beautiful the show is. It's 4K magic, right? That the ability to really just kind of put detail into moments. That guy's look when it's a great double take. It's a I forgot to even list it in comedy, but he's just like, hey, it was a very great moment.
It's so great. There was something about that vibe. I've watched this episode twice, and there's just something about it. Like, he was just picking up like whatever version of Pantoran ale, and then he was going to have a fun night at home. He's just, I just got to pick this up and then I can go. He thought that was going to be such a quick stop, and he was so wrong. Absolute horror. All right. Unless there are any other big ideas, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back to discuss all our favorite details in episode 4 of The Bad Batch.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JenniLanda.com. That's JENILANDA.com for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to finish our discussion of Cornered Bad Batch Episode 4, Season 1. We're going to dive into all those details we enjoyed. Ken, did you have some favorite action moments in this episode that was really packed with action in the second half?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was looking at how to phrase it. I put this as, overall, there's a lot going on, but there was a one specific moment. I call it knife-throwing Hunter versus head-butting Fennec. And I really did enjoy that. Even the way, God, not to make another Game of Thrones reference, but he's got that knife behind him like Braun, and just right for action, flings it, and it's very realistic. I mean, this is Star Wars, pew pew pew, yay fun. But like, I would expect him to be, maybe he's a little bigger and stronger in a way, just on a pure strength level, and she felt that, and then she's so resourceful, even with Wrecker. I like that moment too. But it's like you see her analyzing the situation and analyzing how to win, and that makes it all very effective for me.
Yeah. I wrote down both Hunter and Fennec knife play.
yeah.
Because all of it was really good. I like the way that they both seem to totally recognize one another and be sizing each other up while Omega's slowly catching up and, seeing the blaster and realizing, she already noticed the blaster, but realizing, oh no, this person does not mean me, is not a good friend. They're not going to be a new fun companion on the journey, at least not right now. But then everything about it was good because it was fast and it was cool, but it really did have that strategic element. Like they kind of knew the moves that one another was going to make, like how ready Fennec was for throwing the knife, and then all of her using it against him was great. And then the headbutt was awesome. I loved both the headbutt and then we'll talk about the Wrecker moment too, because it really did elevate Fennec Shan to be like, wow, you really do need to watch out for her. Like she's definitely portrayed as a badass in her first appearance in season one of Mandalorian, but also from the needs of that particular plot, she also gets shot by, one of the biggest losers ever to grace Star Wars, Toro Calican. And I don't even mean that. I know some people don't like the character. I enjoy the character. I think he's meant to be a big loser, just for my own clarity, if there's any Toro Calican fans out there. I'm a fan of what a loser he is. But anyway, you know what I mean? Like, she gets some cool moments, and she's definitely a better fighter than him, but still, like, by the mechanism of the plot, she needs to fall. In this, when you got the Bad Batch and you got to humanize them, it's fun that they are like, yep, against droids, we are unstoppable. We are as good as an entire army. But against somebody like Fennec one-on-one, when she's being strategic, they're going to fall. And there was something about, I don't always need realism in Star Wars, but there was something refreshing about like, getting hit in the head with, a metal helmet might knock you all the way out like it did Hunter. And that was kind of refreshing.
There was two to jump ahead a little bit. Yeah. But to connect your moment, I really love Fennec explodes, falls, leaps, hits the ground and has a limp. I was like, thank you.
Oh yeah. That vicious landing on the taxi sign. Right. And is limping. She managed to get rid of it pretty quick. I'm sure she's got some Bacta with her, but that was nice.
Yeah, but it ties nicely into Hunter just kind of being like, whoa.
Yeah, she's well trained. Yeah, and I think all of those things are great because it heightens that, this is a thrilling adventure and the action is fun and thrilling conflict to watch. But it kind of deepens that feeling of, oh, wow, this is not a fun lark. That Omega isn't getting to see like fun, thrilling adventure. It is deadly. And the fact that Fennec can actually take it to him is what makes it feel actually deadly.
No, there it's you need to, you know, tell the story in the action, right? What do we learn about the characters? And we learn a lot. I learn a lot about Wrecker, who's got a bit of overconfidence because he should. He's been just slugging his way through the galaxy for a long time. And that's why the ability with the animation where it is right now, just that little eye glance, that little look from Fennec, which was so real. It's almost live action to me of like, how do I defeat this monster? I got it. And that's how all that really works for me. It truly tells a story.
Yeah, yeah. I love the smashing Wrecker into a pipe because it was a moment of true surprise. I thought that was going to be a big drawn-out brawl, right?
Yeah.
And that quick look to the side and the fact that she uses all of his weight and momentum against him is just, yeah, it's great visual storytelling in the action that what makes Wrecker really great and really powerful can also be used against him, that she uses his momentum to smash his head into a pipe. It's like Wrecker's head is, he's really can't be doing well.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. He's got headaches last week. That scar, he takes a lot of punches.
Yeah. His head is the focus of all action. Any other action moments for you?
There's some that might be tied into comedy, but I do love Omega. We mentioned it, but like springing into action as best she can to pull down Fennec's blaster when the fight starts initially. And then later on making the decision to lift the trash truck, ties into a fun comedy moment. But you know, again, this is, we talked about even last week, she is part of this squad, part of this team. And even though she's learning, even though she's maybe younger and not a street fighter like the rest of them, she knows what to do. And, you know, who knows where some of the skills are coming from? Big mystery, maybe. I don't know. But I think they're hers, and I think it's who she is. And I love seeing her spring into action when she needs to.
Yeah, no, that was great. Great to see her pull that lever and, yeah, be resourceful. I loved everything about the chase between Hunter and Fennec. And you know, it felt like very, very deadly. And it felt every once in a while in the Clone Wars, and you know, I love the Clone Wars, it can be like, people are shooting at each other. And this really had that constant sense of tactics and that, like, Hunter and both Hunter and Fennec, like, veering out of the way of things that, like, oh no, that person's got the drop on me and they're not going to miss, so I have to get out of the way, you know? There's a lot that made the chase, you know, it really did have those heightened stakes. Another favorite moment from the chase, which is a weird fun favorite moment to have, but Fennec just grabbing that driver from that airspeeder and just throwing him in the horrible scream.
Yeah. Fennec's kill count is not only high, but like one of those, like when the Pentoran officer she hits, it's like, it's just like, whoa, man, that's just,
yep.
They're just out there trying to do their job and Fennec don't care.
Yep. Yep. I think Fennec will continue to develop as a character, and I think we'll have lots of questions about, like, okay, but she's got a code, like, uh-huh, and part of that is throw guy from a car, shoot Pantoran security straight through the heart. I think it is partially, for me, just honestly, a continued appreciation. We've talked about it before, that there's so much about this show that is really just picking up where Clone Wars left off, including not being shy about the real stakes of the violence.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So weird favorite action moment, but I enjoyed the horrific brutality and the horrible scream and the honesty of it all. All right, let's move on then to maybe something more fun than throwing people from their cars.
You know, like, this is a great, hopeful episode. And that death happened and we loved it.
It was great, but that is what makes it work, yeah. Right? That is what you need, that contrast.
Totally.
All right. So, Ken, favorite moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness, grizzled weirdos?
I love, so I, we always say whimsy to me is just this wonder and so many things, and really love the Omega Pentaur it is moment. Just her just so wanting to sightsee and see the world, and why, and she, and I love, she actually just says, like, I've been on Kamino, like, come on. It's great.
That was really nice to just make that crystal clear in case anybody's wondering, like, no, I have not seen any of the galaxy, come on.
Yeah. And I just that little moment of wonder, I don't even need it to tie into the general plot of this episode. It just was great to see her be like, cause she could do that every week, you know, Mustafar it is, like, it doesn't matter. She's seeing the world and I love that.
Yes. The tombs of the Sith. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moriband? Yeah. Yeah, and the same similar reaction, you know, when she's like, sightseeing? What's that? Mm-hmm. Great mm-hmm. stuff. There are a lot of great comedy moments for me. The big winner, the big highlight, you referenced it. This made me literally laugh out loud at, you know, 12:30 in the morning, is cutting to that Aqualish driver. There's that horrific violence going on outside on his vehicle, and he's just obliviously rocking out to electronic dance music. And that was just such a well executed comedy beat that it fully committed to it, where we went into his world and the music entirely changed and just like, everything's great. No, yeah. It's not. God, I love that.
Yeah, it was really effective. This can you know, you'll see this pop up sometimes in other places. And my most favorite one of all time is Gross Point Blank with the kid at the convenience store and the big shootout, Cusack and the assassin, and he's playing the video. So this reminded me of that in the most special way. And it, again the detail in his eyes, he's in it, you feel it, it worked. It was a really funny moment.
It was really really good. And he just looked happy, or they, I don't know. But great Aqualish driver rocking out. I want to be that Aqualish driver.
Don't we all?
All right. What are some other moments for you?
The specific exchange of Wrecker and Tech trying to buy off the Sulliston landing pad administrator there. But the exchange of Wrecker going when he just goes, great. Like, he just totally unaware. It just worked for me. But I love Tech in that moment when he pulls out the credits, I think three credits, and is like, is that sufficient incentive? Which is in that Tech way of just saying, I understand it. Is this the incentive you need for your morals to be, you know, compromised? Like, what is it? And it just, again, and using the Tech comedy so well.
Yeah, it did have that vibe of, I have Googled paying people off. I know what this is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But not the spirit of it. Yeah, in that exchange, the moment I really liked is after they do successfully pay him off, but it was Rocky, Wrecker says, we're getting the hang of this civilian thing. And Tech just shakes his head. No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a very small little visual beat, but it's hilarious.
Yeah, love that.
Another Tech moment for me very early on is just delivery when they're asking him if he can change the codes of the ship. He's like, and mm-hmm. he's got this weird emphasis of, yes, I can do that.
It's
the continuing thread with Tech, where he almost feels like everybody should know what he knows, but there's not a reason for them to know that.
It you could make we maybe have made the reference more of like an IT guy, but it's he's way better than that. But it reminds me a lot of especially working in digital media at a company or something, when you go to like the production guys and the post-production guys and like, hey, could I get a graphic that goes, yes, I could do that. And it's just like, kind of like, because you can't, I will do it. Don't worry.
Don't worry. I'll take care of it again. Yeah. Last big comedy moment for me was that Echo line that you're right has great weight, but it really worked as a comedy line too of Hunter wanting to sell him, and Echo saying, fine. But not at that price. I am worth more than 2,000. Yeah, I wasn't expecting it, and it worked really well.
Kids, know your value and say it funny.
Yeah, exactly. Other moments of comedy or whimsy or weirdness for you?
Two little beats for me. I liked when Fennec Shan told Omega, tuck and roll when you land, kid.
Ooh, yeah.
One of the reasons I love it is similar to her limp later on when she kind of tucks and rolls after a big fall. And I mean, this isn't a criticism of past Star Wars. I don't need, like you said, I don't need Star Wars to be always super realism of, I got shin splints or something. No, like, but, you know, a lot of people fall, a lot of people hit things in Star Wars, and a lot of people are okay. And just to have it explained, like, just tuck and roll. That's all you need to do.
Yeah. And it's a great moment for Fennec Shand where it does kind of play with, like, obviously she is brutal and she will do anything to accomplish her mission. But that line has a little bit of, like, strangely, like, trying to take care of it seems like, well, yeah, no, I need to bring Omega back to wherever I'm taking her in one piece. But it's also like there's a little bit of parental, like, here's how you fall from high places, kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Love the use of it. So I love that. And then the final one for me, just an overall thing, is Lost in Space droid Clink, which is I think we had a similar droid in Resistance.
Yes.
If we remember correctly. But Clink, big star.
Oh, love, yeah. That happy spin. Yeah.
Just great stuff.
Spinning with Clink. That's the yoga video I want to do. All right, then let's move on to some connections to canon and lore and other stories. There's a few fun things to discuss, but I really want to take a moment to put the spotlight on Fennec Shand. What were your overall reactions to seeing her? We knew that she was coming. Were you satisfied? Did you have expectations met? What was the general reaction?
Tremendously satisfied, because number one, this is clearly not a one shot, right? We're going to probably see her again a few times. And I love that. I love that use of the character. It's kind of rare, right, to go in this modern era, to go from live action to animation. And this is the first big swing at it, I think, for me. And I just love the design. She felt Star Wars like she does in Mandalorian. But you know what I mean? Like, it didn't stand out of place to me. I think if you don't know, it doesn't feel weird to you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it feels really good. And this is, you know, we get some time with her in Mandalorian, but she's not front and center, really, other than that first episode. But we get to learn a lot about her and just who she is, how she fights, all the things you and I have been talking about in this episode. And so she shows up as this fully realized character to me. And I think that's a big plus.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed getting to spend more specific quality time with her in terms of having a bounty hunter in this era. She just got like a great look and a great vibe and a great energy. And I thought that there was a lot that hinted at a lot of complexity, like the tuck and roll. And clearly manipulating Omega, but there was, you know, the way it was played so well, there was room to go, okay, well, what is Fennec Shand's history? How does she feel about this kid? Is she recalling times of her own when she was that young and that naive and thought the galaxy was that easy, that you just meet somebody who's alone and offer your hand in friendship and it'll all work out just fine, you know? And the way she said, you know, the galaxy is a dangerous place to be on your own, you know, it had a lot of weight to it. So, like, I love Cad Bane, mm-hmm. but one of the things I love about Cad Bane is he's kind of got this vibe and sometimes dialogue that tells you, I am an open and shut case.
Yeah,
I do things for me, for money, and I will do whatever it takes. There, mm-hmm. you know everything about me, Cad Bane. Right. I feel like that is his character, and I mean that as a compliment. And yeah. Fennec feels a little bit more like, okay, there's lots of gray areas to explore.
Oh, yeah, right? Like, a Fennec Shand prequel novel is, you know, not out of the realm of possibilities already, just because of what you're saying there. Just, again, the weight to some of the comments and the experiences that she's clearly drawn from to say that stuff to Omega.
Yeah, and I really wondered if she was going to fulfill the function of, hey, bounty hunters are after Omega, so here is a one shot, and it's cool to use this bounty hunter because, you know, we're going to spend more time with her in Book of Boba Fett, it would appear. So I was really excited at the end of like, oh no, this is a mission that she's not going to give up on, which means, you know, she could be, you know, appear in one more episode this season, or she could be the big bad of the season, and, you know, she could be on them every episode. You know, we don't know yet, but knowing that this is her story too, I think that's what it was, of her being like, I am going to find that child, made it right. Not just that she is the antagonist, but it suggested that this is her story as well.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, yeah. I really, really could be up for more than just one more appearance. It would work for me.
Yeah. So since there are connections between Omega and Boba Fett, what with them, you know, both coming from Kamino, both being clones of some kind, and Fennec Shand having this connection to Boba Fett, do you feel like there is going to be connective tissue here with Fennec Shand between the Bad Batch and Book of Boba Fett, or do you feel like those are just interesting connections, but they're nothing interesting to be discovered there?
Look, I think it's a very interesting possibility and connection. If Boba at all, like you know, a younger Boba's behind some of that, I could be for that. I hope their connection comes a little bit later. I'd like to see her kind of working on her own, and whoever she's connected with. Part of me even thinks, you know, Lama Sue, you know, the properties escaped or something like that. So But yeah, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? It's in terms of connective tissue, that's one that's kind of already there. And can we explore where it began and how, you know, that connection after episode 5, season 1 Mandalorian and the boots coming up and having a lot behind that? Or was that the first moment they met? I'd rather have a little bit more history so I could follow this thread.
Yeah. And I need to look up the exact dialogue in The Mandalorian, but there was some turn of phrase, which I could be entirely incorrect about, that made me feel like the meeting between Fennec Shand and Boba Fett was newer, and the relationship was newer and completely based upon, I think it was the discussion of like that he didn't just leave me in the sand, so I owe him, you know? And that was the bond, not like, oh yeah, we've known each other since the beginning of the Empire, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there's the possibility of whatever is going on in Book of Boba Fett, it being just a fun grace note, or maybe having something to do with Boba Fett's wrestling with his identity of Fennec being like, I know clones, you know, that, you know, it could be something that's just these adventures will be referenced, but it's not like, she is forever tied to Boba Fett. What is your instinct in terms of the end and the plot of, Is this a story where, of course, it's Lamassu. Yes, they want Omega back. Or are you thinking of this in a more of what I think of as a Blues Brothers way, where the Bad Batch is going to have 8 different people after them for 8 different reasons by the end of season 1?
I would rather have that, especially any enemies they make along the way. And we already got Tarkin at Rampart. A lot of people not happy with him, probably. Crosshair being an important one here. We don't even really see him or hear him in this episode. I'd like a cavalcade of enemies.
Yeah. I feel like it absolutely could be, you know, the Kaminoans who have hired Fennec Shand. But the fact that there's mystery left and the fact that Hunter's like, we're going to figure out who it is. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's just building up the feeling of betrayal from Hunter and the Bad Batch that it is Lamassu. So it could be that, or it could be, for me, it just suggested this mystery of like, we still don't know what Omega's purpose is, right? And is there somebody else who also knows, and there's going to be many different people. Anybody who knows the secret of Omega wants to get their hands, you know?
Yeah.
Which again would be interesting because it would create even more connective tissue between Mandalorian of, you know, we're raising this child that has secret powers that everybody wants.
Yeah, look, there's some rhymes and rhythms there for sure, but it's pretty effective right now. But and especially, I guess it's just a measure of like how many people knew about Omega. You know, the fandom did not know it all, right, Clayton? Not a lot of people know what goes on at Kamino anyways, but there were people there, and there were Jedi and clones and troops and officers and techs and science folks. Science folks is what scientists are sometimes called. So who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. It is a fun mystery. Moving on then to other canon lore connections, I wanted to, of course, talk about Pantora. It was great to see Pantora, which is, of course, been featured in the Clone Wars, or rather Pantorans have been featured, and the nearby moon where the Talls live. How did you feel about seeing Pantora proper?
I really loved it. I loved the design a lot there. You talked about going to kind of that urban environment. It reminded me of points of a little bit of Galaxy's Edge with the marketplace, without a doubt. You know, for a second, I thought, wait a minute, where did they go?
I was going to ask you about that. If you had that slight feeling of like, I've been to that toy shop or one like it.
Totally. There's a great bathroom right across from there. It's very easy. Easily accessible. Absolutely. Including down to the toys and everything about it. It was just a lot of fun. And that name pops up immediately. Like, you know, who's going to be there? We're going to have a cameo from Papanoida. What do we got here?
Yeah. Ryo Chuchi's still the senator. What's going on? Yeah. And I like that we can visit places and not see everybody that we know from that place every time. So that was good. But there was a part of me is like, just give me a little Ryo Chuchi hologram in the background. Come on.
A poster somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was really great to see it. Also just great to see this picture of, you know, we know Coruscant is, you know, the city planet. But it's great to see another urban environment that functions very similarly to Coruscant. It's not the entire city, but that's kind of like, this is what urban environments look like. And also, you know, sometimes in Star Wars, it could be like, hey, here is the planet where the Pantorans live. And it's great to see that this Pantoran city has a ton of different kind of people and species in it. And it's a true urban environment.
Yeah, Rick Olier would say, the whole planet is almost a city. Except for over there.
That one part of it that's a city is a city. Excellent. Yeah, it's great to see. Great to see. Mm-hmm. Some other things. I really loved Omega seeing real live Tuukka Cats she's got the doll. That was really great. Mm-hmm. Of course, we had the Vorpax, the name of the creature that is similar to, well, the same species as Buggles, Toradoza's pet from Star Wars Resistance, and being just as cute and trouble causing.
I absolutely want to raise a Vorpak. Love seeing that connection. And again, that Resistance, two seasons. If you guys haven't watched it, there's some great stuff in there. And I do feel it got a little overlooked at times, and maybe some reasons for that. But I love that it's clearly part of it. It's clearly part of the animation offices, and I love that they're pulling from it.
Yeah, and like you said, the droid in this episode of Clink is an LE series. Same line as LE-12 from Resistance. I think there's something about not just seeing like, okay, yeah, the animation studio, of course, is like, yes, we made Vorpax. We like Vorpax. We're putting Vorpax in here. But I think for me, it's great to see also just the eras come together. Like this whole era of Disney Lucasfilm has been great of, if something gets invented one place, it really gets used other places, you know, everything from Death Troopers to Vorpax that make it feel like an entire connected galaxy. But it was extra cool to see something from, you know, Resistance that is set in a different part of the Star Wars timeline, different animation style. It, like you're saying, I don't think as thoroughly viewed and discussed as some other parts of Star Wars, and see like it really being a part of Star Wars, all of Star Wars, by being in this different location.
Yeah, it gives it a higher grade of merit. Absolutely.
Yeah. So maybe we can see the Elder Doza at some point. That would be great.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah. Omega could try to make friends with him too.
Yeah, no, that'd be really good. Oh man.
Yeah.
One of those. You create an expectation to me that I must put on a shelf.
Yes, see him growing out that mustache, right?
Yeah.
And then I like seeing the security cameras, like on the Death Star. That was cool.
Yeah, totally.
That was it for me. Did you have any other moments of canon or lore connection that popped out to you?
The only big one for me is going back to Pantora, and we talked about already, but just the march of the clone troopers and the shouts and the screams and the happiness and a war ending. And you can see how it works from the Empire's point of view of, you know, look what we've done. It really connect. I thought of Padme going, so this is how Liberty dies. Mm-hmm. I just thought of her in that moment and everything she was trying to fight for, and then her spirit will live on and others trying to fight for. So that was a connection for me.
No, and this was a great moment where you could do a great double feature of going back to Clone Wars. We recently watched that great episode with Baron Papanoida and Senator Rio Chuchi, where the Separatists are, you know, close to convincing Pantora to get on their side in the war, right?
Yeah.
So you know Pantora has been through some rough times, so you can understand why those people would be cheering of like, yeah, the war's over. Our clone troopers did it. And now everything's going to be great. And not seeing the evidence in front of their faces because there's such relief from the horrors that they have been experiencing. It's really powerful.
Well, the Empire has not revealed its true identity. Yes.
Exactly.
Ask.
great poll. Was there anything in this episode that you disliked or questioned?
Ah, man, no. No, again, every week I go, is this the week I go a pox on this moment and not there for this one. One of the reasons, it was just such a wonderfully short, compact, fun episode that is a lot of action once it gets revved up. So I was on board for all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I did not question or dislike anything from this compact rock song of an episode, as you called it. Do you have hopes or expectations or secret dreams for the next episode?
We talked before about, maybe they could catch a breath, settle in and move to a bigger plot. But, it's not shaping up yet. And I think we'll get there eventually. But I wouldn't I'd like a little bit more of the onion to be peeled back. I don't need answers yet, but it's just fun. It's just fun. The end with Fennec Shan was fun. And we do love speculations over here. A little more information tidbits dropped on the path would be nice for me.
Yeah. Yeah. This episode had such a strong cliffhanger vibe. It isn't the aesthetic of these animated shows to do like old school cliffhangers of bum, bum, bum. It's a nice fade out. But in terms of what was actually said by both our heroes and the current antagonists of Fennec Shand, it had a real cliffhanger vibe to me of Hunter saying we have to find out who she is and who she's working for. And then Fennec saying, I will get her. I felt the desire to, be able to binge and hit next episode. A part of me that kind of feels like the next episode does pick up directly on that. I do like to see the characters proactive and, they've got this one sort of dangling thread of like, we know that Hunter doesn't want to leave Crosshair behind and wants to figure that out. We know they kind of need to just figure out all the basic necessities. They got cash now. So maybe next episode is just, buying supplies or whatever. But that cliffhanger vibe was so strong to me. There's a part of me that just feels like it would be great if Hunter was just like, or anybody from the Bad Batch was like, we have a contact that might know, what kind of bounties are out there and we're going there because we need to know who she is right now. She's an immediate threat.
They've been out in the galaxy. That's the big appeal of Bad Batch is they're not the regs. They got a Rolodex that maybe they don't have. So to mine that's a good call.
Yeah. My other hope is that possibility of Rex soon. I think partially because I think that's what I was thinking about. I liked that this episode did have more Echo, but I still think that I'm hungering for a super Echo spotlight. And what was occurring to me while I was watching this episode and all the great Echo moments that were in it is that the Bad Batch outside of Echo, they have a relationship with one another. They've met other people clearly like Cutla Quain. But, Echo's got this big history with Rex, and that should be an emotional moment for Echo to have any interaction with Rex and know what Rex's experience of Order 66 is and what he went through and what happened to Anakin, what happened to Ahsoka, what happened to Obi-Wan. Echo would care about those things. So I think when Rex pops up, that's will be a great opportunity to explore Echo.
Explore Echo with Rick. That's a great call. Crosshair. We're getting there. The fact that he wasn't here in this episode works for me. I don't need Crosshair in every episode, but building that and seeing where we're going with that and getting to the core of these clones' identities, the Bad Batch now in this new world, that could be important. And Rex would be a key part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, I was going to make sure we talked about the kills of Fennec Shand here, but I figured we would get to that there. But she's brutal.
Yeah. Only other thing for me is I really enjoyed some of the different transitions in this episode. There was that great moment really early on when Omega says Pantora it is, and then the image is all sliding rectangles. And there's like one other transition like that just had a slightly different vibe, which is really great because I think it just gives it a lot of energy. There's a lot of comfort in this show that looks like Clone Wars and really feels like Star Wars. And when it's a shot of a ship in space above a glowing planet and it's landing, it's like, oh, this is great, it's comfy, I'm at home, this is Star Wars. And then having something different like those transitions is a great energy and a great bit of new with the comfortable.
Star Wars good call on the transitions of Star Wars. We should write a book or a supercut YouTube video about all the stars. No, well done. It just, these episodes are so beautifully directed. And I've talked about the little moments and little details with some of the faces and everything. I've just been enjoying that more than just, wow, beautiful. Just what they're able to pull off. These almost seem, I was even thinking today, I was like, this could have been live action. You know, I'm glad it's animation, but you know, it's just so smooth. The details, everything about it, it's cinematic for sure.
Yeah, the colors pop. So great. So great. All right. So we always like to wrap up with the most important discussion, toys. If you could have a toy or an action figure of any character or moment from this episode, what do you want, Ken?
I do want a real life Vorpak, not even a toy, just so we can engineer those. That'd be great.
Need that purple urine in my life.
Yeah, we do. Look, Clink is a great name. I call him Lost in Space Dromek, but I do think we need a Clink Pop. He's a breakout star.
A Clink Pop.
Clink Pop. Give me a Clink Pop. And we just need a really good 3¾ Fennec Shand in the animation style.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I want that clone doll. It's similar, the actual toy that Omega wanted. It's similar to some of the Stormtrooper type toys they have at Galaxy's Edge, but I want the clone specifically. Yeah. And then there are two action figures that I really want, 3¾, Ken. The first is a Hunter in Weekend Dad outfit.
Yes. Hunter on the go. Yes.
Hunter on the go, which, yeah, I really liked it. Like, okay, I can't wear my armor. I've got to kind of blend in here. So I'll wear this. You're like, what? I'm just shopping. I'm just going to the farmer's market outfit that he's got is really great. While also still having half a tattoo of a skull on his face. Not that I want him to get rid of it, but his outfit was great. But the thing I really want, Ken, is I need a 3¾ action figure of Aqualish with a rock out action.
Yeah, I was gonna say Echo as a droid's good, everything, but yeah, we need Aqualish truck driver rocking.
That's right, just bouncing to the beats, that Aqualish. Mm-hmm. All right, that is our big look at Cornered, episode 4 of The Bad Batch. Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Love to. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram, and we rebroadcast the podcast on YouTube. We are on Facebook, if you want to go over there. Facebook, you can find us at Force Center Podcast. You can get an Audible book on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. We are available in a lot of different spots, including Anchor, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, among other spots. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. You can find me at Ken Knapsack or go to my website, KenKnapsack.com. And for you, Joseph, they can go here.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok as at Joseph Scrimshaw. Same handle for all of those places. And if you want to check out any of my other comedy adventures, my other podcast obsessed comedy albums, all kind of stuff like that, it's all on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Fennec Shand, and for rocking out Aqualish, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow,
and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.